Tuesday at 1 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
Well, this is BBC Radio 3. We're on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. The time is 1 o'clock and here's the news with David McNeill.
Buckingham Palace says the Duke of Edinburgh is in good spirits following treatment for a blocked artery. Prince Philip was taken to Papworth Hospital in Cambridgeshire yesterday evening after complaining of chest pains. The hospital fitted a stent in the artery. The Queen, the Duke of York, the Princess Royal and the Earl of Wessex arrived at Papworth by helicopter for a visit which lasted 45 minutes. After they left, the Prince of Wales and the Duchess of Cornwall arrived by car from Highgrove. Organisers say that around 120,000 people have attended an opposition rally in Moscow demanding that elections be rerun because of allegations of widespread fraud. The police have put the number at 28,000. Smaller rallies have also been held in cities elsewhere in Russia and Siberia. Thousands of people have taken part in a funeral for the 44 people killed in a double suicide bomb attack in the centre of Damascus. The Syrian government has blamed Al-Qaeda for the bombings, which targeted security services in the capital. Opposition activists think Syria's regime may have been involved. Agency workers are entitled to the same pay and conditions as directly employed staff from today, provided they've been in their jobs for 12 weeks. The change is due to a European Union directive. Libya is celebrating the 60th anniversary of independence today. It's the first time for more than four decades that Libyans have marked the date. Under Colonel Gaddafi's rule, they could only celebrate the date he seized power in 1969. Thousands of pilgrims, tourists and local Christians have begun the traditional Christmas Eve celebrations in Bethlehem. Tourism officials say they're expecting around 90,000 visitors. Part of a Russian satellite that failed to reach orbit has crashed onto a street named in honour of Russian space explorers. A fragment of the satellite went through the roof of a house in Kosmonaut Street in a Siberian village. No one was hurt. The weather forecast: cloud will gradually increase from the west, but it will remain dry and bright. Temperatures will rise slowly and it'll be breezy. And that's the BBC News at 2 minutes past one.
And that was David McNeill. I'm Jill Anderson. Very good afternoon to you. Looking ahead to 5 o'clock, our Opera on Three comes live from the Metropolitan Opera in New York. And it's a performance of Donizetti's The Daughter of the Regiment. Nino Machaidze sings the role of Marie and Lawrence Brownlee Tonio, with Anne Murray singing the Marquise of Birkenfeld, and Kiri Te Kanawa takes the spoken role of the Duchess of Crackenthorpe. The Metropolitan Opera Chorus and Orchestra are conducted by Yves Abel, and that performance starts tonight at 5 o'clock, which means that Jazz Record Requests for today is at 8:15 this evening. But now, here's Lucy Skeeping with a Christmas edition of The Early Music Show.
France can boast a wonderful heritage of what we'd call Christmas carols, popular tunes and melodies that seem to combine rustic folk styles and dance-like melodies with the simple words of the Christmas story, what the French have historically called Noël. Many of these melodies are very old. Composers as far back as late medieval times would sometimes incorporate them into the midnight mass at Christmas. And later on, it became customary to use them as the basis for organ improvisations.
Thank you.
Christopher Dawes with an organ improvisation on that same French Noël, When Joseph Was Wed. By the 17th century, the tradition of using these popular Noël as part of the church service saw composers making quite sophisticated arrangements of them for small groups of instruments. And in this Christmas Eve edition of the Early Music Show, we're focusing on a man who, more than any other, made brilliantly imaginative use of them in his liturgical music, Marc-Antoine Charpentier. Joseph est bien marié, one of several popular French Noël arranged by Marc-Antoine Charpentier, Les Arts Florissants, directed by William Christie. I wish I could tell you all about Charpentier, but the fact is we know very little. He lived and worked in Paris and was born around 1650, or perhaps just a little earlier, and died soon after 1700. So the second half of the 17th century, the heyday of Louis XIV. As a young man, Charpentier went to study in Rome, where he absorbed the sort of musical styles encouraged by the clergy, and came under the influence of his teacher, the Italian church composer Carissimi. After two or three years, he returned home to Paris, where he was to have all the advantages and some of the disadvantages of the veritable cultural explosion that characterised the reign of the Sun King. As a younger contemporary of Lully, Charpentier worked in the theatre with important figures such as Molière. But don't get the idea he was any kind of bigwig at court. He wasn't that kind of person. And anyway, the prickly and highly territorial Lully, under strict orders to make everything at court sound uniquely French, was certainly not the kind of man to encourage a potential rival, especially one whose musical talent had been honed in Rome. Instead, much of Charpentier's music was heard within the more modest and cloistered ambience of the church. In fact, for some 10 years, he was musician in residence in the household of Marie de Lorraine, the Duchess of Guise, a cousin of Louis XIV and an ageing grandee who lived in the rather palatial Hôtel de Guise in the Marais district of Paris. It was said that the Duchess of Guise was devoted to prayer and good deeds, and she was a generous supporter of many of Paris's churches and convents. She spent time in Florence in her youth, where she acquired a great love of Italian art and music. It was a taste she retained throughout her life, and consequently she surrounded herself with culture. Even some of her domestic servants doubled as singers in her personal choir. Now, in her last years, the Duchess gave every encouragement to young Charpentier. Her three beautiful chapels resounded with music from morning till night, and it was here that many of his Christmas works received their first performance, including his set of canticles called In Nativitatem. This is part of one of them, the final song of the shepherds, a dialogue between soloists and chorus. Hail, tiny child, you are born into the world to share the lot of us poor mortals. And whilst Charpentier doesn't quote the tune of any specific traditional Noël, as you'll hear, the melody and gentle dance-like rhythm reflects something of the simple charm that so many of them embodied. And in doing so, he beautifully recreates the mystical atmosphere of the Nativity.
Ooh.
the song of the shepherds from Charpentier's In Nativitatem from the early 1670s, Les Arts Florissants, directed by William Christie. Several elements came together in music of this kind. There was the sacred story of the Nativity and therefore a suggestion of the popular idioms associated with traditional Noël. And there was also a bias towards the pastoral aspects of the Nativity story, the shepherds watching their flocks, who very much mirrored the Arcadian idylls that were so often part of theatrical and operatic productions of the time. These simple, honest characters conveyed a kind of homespun philosophy, which was a welcome contrast to all those gods and heroes who usually featured in the plot lines. And, of course, they also helped emphasise the need for humility from one and all before the manger of the newborn Christ, and for reflection on simple wisdom and naturalness in the light of the momentous event. In 1688, Charpentier's patron, the Duchess of Guise, died, and he was taken on by the Jesuits, the most powerful religious order in Europe. Their Paris headquarters was the magnificent Église Saint-Louis, an elaborately decorated Baroque masterpiece full of sculptures, gilded balustrades, marble columns and solid gold vases. In this theatrical setting, services were likewise rich and dramatic. In fact, on some occasions, musicians from the nearby opera would join the choir in the loft, often acting out the psalms in such an extravagant way that it was said that those who couldn't get to the opera could at least console themselves by going to Vespers. Here, as maître de musique, Charpentier created many of his greatest church works, including Christmas oratorios and pastorals, and their popular dramatic style made a huge impact. This is part of his Pastorale sur la naissance de Jésus-Christ. Again, the shepherd scene takes centre stage in the piece, but we'll join in at the point in which the angel arrives. There's a short instrumental ritornello before the angel calls for calm over the earth, the sea and the sky, and announces the news of the holy birth, prompting much celebration from all.
Thank you. Thank you.
part of Charpentier's Pastorale sur la naissance de Jésus-Christ. Les Arts Florissants, directed by William Christie. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping, and a seasonal programme of Christmas music by the French composer Marc-Antoine Charpentier. It was also for his Jesuit masters that Charpentier created what is probably the best known of all his Christmas compositions, his Messe de Minuit de Noël, or Midnight Mass on Carols. We're going to hear the entire piece in a moment. But first, let's just listen to one of the Noëls on its own that's featured in the work. A young maiden of noble heart praying in her chamber to her creator is told of the mystery of our Saviour. How can this be, she asks, for I have never known a man. Jeune Pucelle, one of the traditional French Noël or carols that Charpentier used as the basis for the second Kyrie section in his Messe de Minuit. As I mentioned earlier on, incorporating elements from traditional French carols into the Christmas Eve service wasn't a new one. It went back to medieval times, if not before. But the idea of building the Mass itself around these simple melodies was truly bold. Charpentier was almost certainly the first to do it, and he didn't just stop with one. In fact, each movement of his Midnight Mass incorporates a different melody. There are 11 of them in all, and each one would have been familiar to the congregation, adding an appealingly popularist quality to the whole work. Some of them were well-loved dances, bourrées and gavottes, for example. Others were based on folk songs. But what's so telling is the way Charpentier selected them so that each one suits precisely the mood of the essentially religious text of the Mass. The whole thing lasts a little over 20 minutes, so relax and enjoy. Oh, and you'll probably recognise the very first tune. It's the little Noël Joseph est bien marié, which we heard right at the beginning of the programme. Thank you.
Magnus filius filius patris.
Thank you.
Messe de Minuit by Marc-Antoine Charpentier, performed there by Les Musiciens du Louvre, directed by Mark Minkowski. And I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. Have a wonderful festive evening and do join us tomorrow if you can for our special Christmas Day edition of The Early Music Show.
That was Lucy Skeeping, and the programme was produced in Salford by Chris Wines. The Early Music Show is also available as a download, and full details are on the Radio 3 website.
Christmas on BBC One.
Hello, they're everywhere! They've got your grandfather's gold coin, thievy little pickpockets!
Time for the little people to come up from under the floorboards.
Who are you calling little?
Well, you are quite small.
The borrowers.
Aren't you gorgeous?
Get us out of here now!
With Stephen Fry, Victoria Wood and Christopher Eccleston.
It's amazing.
We call it Hackney.
The Borrowers, Boxing Day at 7:30 on BBC One and BBC One HD.
Well, back to BBC Radio 3. And this afternoon at 3 o'clock, John Wilson, the conductor, will be here presenting a selection of festive music for the cinema, including scores by Dmitri Tiomkin, John Williams, Malcolm Arnold and Danny Elfman. That's our Saturday Classics starting at 3 o'clock. But now it's 2 o'clock and another chance to hear last Monday's lunchtime concert from London's Wigmore Hall. It's introduced by Katie Derham.
Thank you. And there is a rather excited buzz here at London's Wigmore Hall. And it's not just festive cheer and mince pies in the foyer. Nicola Ahlstedt, BBC New Generation artist, multi-award winner and poster boy for cool young cellists, is our star today. And he has a reputation for causing something of a stir whenever he performs. Today he's going to demonstrate what has been called his unassailable technique, with a programme ranging from the classicism of Beethoven to the cool tango of Piazzolla, via the French poise of Boulanger, and a rather lovely sonata of Prokofiev's, composed for Rostropovich during one of the Soviet composer's darkest and most challenging times. Nicola is joined by Argentinian pianist José Gallardo, who actually gets the lion's share of the limelight in today's first work. The Beethoven, 12 variations on See the Conquering Hero, comes from Handel's oratorio Judas Maccabeus. It was written in 1796 in Berlin, where Beethoven was trying to make his name as a performer as well as a composer. He was hobnobbing with the great and the good of the Prussian court, amongst them a particularly fine cellist called Jean-Louis Duport, for whom he wrote two cello sonatas. In this set of variations, though, chosen to please the king, who was a huge Handel fan, the cello part seems to have been written for a very good player rather than a complete virtuoso. The Prussian king Friedrich Wilhelm II was an accomplished cellist, and so it's not entirely impossible these variations were intended for him to play. It's only really the 7th and 11th variation where you'll really hear Nicolas shine. But at first he's more of an accompanist to José, and I should say, Beethoven actually did call these variations for piano and cello, so perhaps we shouldn't be surprised. Here they are now, coming to the stage here at London's Wigmore Hall, Nicola Ahlstedt and José Gallardo.